It's 8 o'clock.
And there's going to be an anthem, and...
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
And good evening. This is Chippicon, and this is The New Normal on liveparanormal.com. This is the show where we try and make the paranormal just a normal part of your daily life. It's kind of a new definition of normal, but there we go. Tonight, we have, my guest is going to be Daniel Johnson, and we have had various shamans and mediums and psychics. And the religious background, spiritual perspective, has a huge impact on the way people understand the paranormal that happens to them. And tonight, I've got Daniel Johnson. Would you be Elder Daniel Johnson?
Just Daniel is fine. We don't need to be that formal.
And he is from the Church of the Latter-day Saints, which means he has the perspective that of the Latter-day Saints. He's an author. He has done your book is on Mesoamerica, or is that just one of the many things you talk about?
The books are about, there are two of them. One is called An LDS Guide to Mesoamerica, and one is called An LDS Guide to the Yucatan. And so they're basically about the history and archaeology of that region and very particular sites, and then correlating that with a Mormon perspective on things.
And I think the Mormon perspective on things has to be at least slightly different and interesting. After all, the Latter-day Saints, with Joseph Smith, was communicating with the angel Moroni, if I'm correct remembering that, just in the 19th century. So we don't.
Yes, I mean, that's true. There are some things that do make us a bit unusual and unique compared to other religions around here. I would like to point out, and this is a common thing I hear, the actual name of the church is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Oh, well,
and so that's an important thing for us.
Well, thanks for the correction. I shall write that down. I hate to get somebody's religion wrong. I'm posting in the chat room the link to the books in case they want to look those up. I love archaeology. This is a very exciting thing to me. And let's just start from the beginning, assuming that a lot of our listeners are not going to know much about the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints. Tell us what we need to know.
Okay. It kind of started in the early 19th century, early 1800s. And it started off with, as you mentioned, with a boy named Joseph Smith. And for him at a fairly young age, it had to do with religious just contention and confusion on his part. He was confused by the religious revivals in his area and didn't know which one would have been right. And so he, and learning from the Bible, decided to pray himself and ask God which church that he should join. And so he went to a secluded place in some woods nearby and prayed. And his account of the events and our belief is that he was visited at that time by God the Father and by Jesus Christ, who told him that he should join none of the churches. So, and a bit later on, he was contacted by a heavenly messenger that you mentioned, the angel Moroni, and one of his first callings, responsibilities, was to translate an ancient record that was known as the Book of Mormon. So we are, a big part of our belief has to do with an open connection between mankind and the heavens, with communion with heavenly beings and receiving instruction from that way. So we look at Joseph not as a reformer or a protester against any existing religion, but someone who restored an ancient religion, restored the ancient religion of Jesus Christ and his apostles. So that kind of puts us at an unusual spot with the rest of the Christian world right there.
Okay. So this is a restoration of going back to first century.
Mm-hmm. And we believe that it can goes back even further, but that it wasn't like the Protestant reformers, they weren't, reforming Christianity or what was happening at the time. So we don't see ourselves as Protestant in that way.
But you do see yourself as followers of Jesus Christ.
That is correct, yes.
Okay, well, this being the Live Paranormal, we're going to be mostly interested in the weird and spooky stuff. So the perspective, now the first thing off the top of my head is that there's still an active interaction. Now, do we still have, are there people in the church that speak to other angels, or Moroni still around?
Well, Moroni's job is over. And so what he's doing at the moment, I can't quite say. But we hold Joseph Smith to be a prophet, a modern-day prophet, and we believe that after him, the calling continued. And so we view the current leader of our church today as a prophet, and we have a group of 12 apostles that assist him. And so we do believe that in a direct connection with, between prophets and the heavens, and that divine revelation and inspiration can be given. It might not be as necessary anymore because we believe that kind of a pattern was given through Joseph Smith, but we believe that does still exist. The heavens are open. But perhaps more on an individual sense, we believe that the individual can receive inspiration from the heavens for his own life and can have that connection with, with the world of spirit beyond when it fits into God's plan.
Well, that's not particularly different than most people who understand that humans are psychic.
Yeah.
It just depends on who you're going to be talking to, whether you're talking to your ancestors, whether you're talking to... Do you guys speak to your ancestors directly as other psychics do?
No, we don't. And as far as, relating to, psychic or spiritualist movements, we believe that the spirit world is there and that it's a real thing, but that usually the communication isn't initiated from our end of things. That if a message needs to get to us from the world beyond in the economy of God, that can happen. So it's not necessarily a two-way type of communication. We would view that these instances probably as being fairly rare, but just that it can happen. And when it does happen, or if it does happen, it doesn't require any external sources like Ouija boards or spirit writing or anything like that. That if it fits into the plan of God, then someone from the other side could contact us directly through an impression, through a dream, through something to let us know things that we might need to know. So it probably doesn't happen as often as we might like it to happen, but we do believe that the possibility is there.
Okay. so you do believe that there is an afterlife. Do you want to give us the basic perspective on the afterlife?
Certainly. And for us, before I would talk about the afterlife, I would go before, and I would talk about a before life. We believe that all of us existed before we were born, and that our spirits are eternal, that they can't be created or made or unmade. So we, in some sense, are eternal beings, and we're at this moment right now in this mortal existence with a physical body that is very important. So we believe that our existence, you know, begins before birth, and that it certainly continues after. And so the death is merely a transition where the spirit leaves the body and continues its existence in a world we call the spirit world. And that would be a time where you would be reunited with those you know who have gone before. It's also a time where there is much work to be done in the spirit world, and a time where there could be a lot to be done to help other spirits there who might feel a bit lost or who aren't as prepared as they should be. So we see that as being a very natural and active role, but something that, you know, might be a bit hard to imagine since there's such a great emphasis now on, you know, on the here and now, on the physical life, and many people sort of doubt the spiritual world. But we believe that it is very real, and that, you know, our consciousness, our innate selves, the things we learn and progress, that stays with us. That never goes away.
Okay, so can you tell me more about before life? This is not something that most philosophies include. Do you guys remember your before lives?
We don't remember. We look at it as there is a veil, that's kind of our terminology, that was placed on our memories when we come to this earth and our spirits enter into a physical body, and that there's a veil that separates us from looking past, for the most part, looking past mortality into, you know, the next life. So we're kind of isolated right here and going on faith. So what we know about this comes from our scriptures, which we have scriptures in addition to the Bible, and from things which our prophets and people like Joseph Smith received from heavenly messengers. So the teaching would be that spirit is eternal, also that matter is eternal, that it is never created or destroyed, but just organized and disorganized. And so we believe that we lived in a world before this earth was created. We sometimes call the pre-existence, and that we lived as spirit children of God. And that we were individuals. We are innate. And so there's something about us that is eternally, uniquely, innately our own, no matter what. And so we lived in this time and learned and grew and progressed as much as we could. And then God created a physical world for us to be born into so that our progress might continue. Kind of like, you know, you can teach your children only so much in the house, and at one time they've got to grow up and leave and go off on their own. So we look at it as being analogous to that our progress in a spiritual sense was limited, and that we need a physical body to continue to learn and progress. So we look at eternity as one of kind of continual progression, that we were progressing to a point before our birth, and that we accepted certain challenges and responsibilities for our birth, and that the whole point of this earthly life is to continue to progress, hopefully, through faith. So some progress, some don't, but, you know, this is kind of the time of the test.
Oh, so the physical world is where we're being tested?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we look at it as being a very, very important part of our eternal progression. that we all come to Earth with kind of in some sense a clean slate as far as we know, but that we have innate tendencies and abilities that are just part of our eternal makeup, and we kind of can carry on with that. And this Earth is a test for us to, wherever we happen to end up, whatever situation we happen to end up in, that we do the best we can with whatever amount of light and knowledge we have to progress as much as we can in this world. And we look at life and everything we do in this world as being a direct preparation for the world to come. That it's not an arbitrary test, but that the things we go through are to prepare us for greater things afterwards.
Okay, so you don't consider the physical world a bad place, or you'd say it's necessary, but it's not the veil of tears or the.
I mean, it certainly has its share of tears, and we believe that for our progress there must be opposition, and so. The opposition is provided by a common adversary of all mankind, but that the goal is for a physical existence. Our teaching is that the spirit by itself does not reach a fullness of joy without a physical body as part of it. And so this physical world is a beautiful thing, and our receiving a physical body and the opportunities we have to have sensory experiences and to learn that way is not only necessary, but also a beautiful thing.
Yeah, so this is a part of our life, and there will be another part later that doesn't encompass the physical world, but this is an important part.
And we believe that eventually that existence will be physical as well. We believe in a physical resurrection, as do many Christians. And so that sometime after death, there will be a resurrection, and that resurrection is the reuniting of the spirit with the same body you had in your mortal existence, only perfected and purified, so that all of your frailties or any problem is gone. And then that would be an eternal existence afterwards.
So you're not icky and 90 years old when you come back.
Well, we kind of look at it as being in the prime of life. You know, whatever that may be, but we don't know any more than that. But other than all problems, all infirmities will be removed.
That would be good.
Yeah.
Just the idea of coming back to the same, or it intrinsically has broken down, is not a good idea.
Right. Yeah. So we are looking for something a bit better.
An upgrade, as it were.
Exactly, an eternal upgrade. There you go.
Okay, so you are one of the ways that people sometimes express it is that some say, "Well, you're not a person, a body that has a soul, or are you a soul that has a body?" So you're saying that it's your spirit that you're both.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. We look at the soul as being the combination of spirit and body. So the spirit alone is not complete, and obviously the body without the spirit is not complete. But we technically view the soul as being the body and spirit, although it is common among many people to kind of use spirit and soul interchangeably. We would technically say that the soul is the spirit and the body together. And we believe that can symbolically seen by the creation of Adam, that God formed his body and then put into him his spirit, or the breath of life. And the Hebrew word for that is ruach, which can be breath or spirit or many things. And then he became, in Hebrew, which would be nefesh. He became a living soul. So the soul is the combination of the body and the spirit. And so at death, the soul is kind of incomplete because the spirit and body are separate, and that spirit is kind of longing and waiting for the opportunity to return.
So you have, so here we are. This is the physical world, which is an important part of the entire eternal life. where I guess you get your first run with a not quite upgraded body. So you were an eternal spirit, and then you get born into a family. Now, you don't have reincarnation, so how do people come together in family? How do you find the people that you're going to get born to? Is that something that...
What was that again? I'm trying to figure out exactly what you're asking.
When one is thinking about reincarnation, usually you choose to go and live with people that you have lived with before. Now, since you're just spirits that have come from the before and you're going through, how do you find your family?
I don't know that we know a whole lot about that, but there's the idea that in many ways, perhaps those with whom we are closest in life, perhaps our families, that we may have known them in pre-existence. And so it may be a combination of an assignment from God, if you will, and a combination of our accepting and choosing and saying, you know, yes, I will go down to that family and that situation. So there's a bit of speculation on that point. But our belief is that whatever it is, it's not haphazard. That where you're born and when you're born and the circumstances around that, that they have been something that has been determined that that's what you need in this life. Between you and God or however it worked, that's the situation that you particularly with your individual needs and desires and all that, that was what you most need in this mortal existence. So there is a plan, a reason for everything.
So if you and your kids or you and your parents are pushing each other's buttons, that's because you needed that experience.
Maybe so.
So now I've heard stories, and I think this is one of the more interesting things, that there's a lot of interest in genealogy because you want to find out who your forefathers were. And is this a rumor, or is this something that actually happens?
No, I think it's true. There is a great interest among Mormons in genealogy. And in fact, there are stories among many people about perhaps some help from the other side, from their ancestors, in finding information or in being led down certain paths they might not normally find. So we have a great interest in genealogy. And in fact, if you go to Salt Lake City, the Church has a family history library that anyone can go and use and search records all over the world and try and find this. So there's a great interest for us, and part of that has to do with our belief in the spirit world. So our belief is that we continue living, and we also believe that there are certain ordinances that are necessary for our eternal progress that have to be performed on this earth, and that people who die without that opportunity, without that knowledge, they're in the spirit world and they're at a bit of a loss, a bit of a disadvantage until that can happen for them. And so we believe that we have the opportunity to search out our ancestors and perform these ordinances on behalf of them. One thing that some people might know about Mormons is a practice or an idea called baptism for the dead. And that's actually mentioned in an odd little verse that's in the New Testament. Paul mentions it, and it doesn't seem there's not much explanation behind it. What we believe is that we have the opportunity to, on this mortal existence, which is very important, to have baptisms and other ordinances performed on behalf of our ancestors who are dead. And they've already passed to the spirit world without that opportunity. And so we search out their information, we find out who they are through genealogy work, and then we can have these ordinances performed in their name. It doesn't mean that absolutely means that that makes them Mormons or they accept it. It means that it gives them the opportunity to accept it if they so choose. So we look at the spirit world as a time where people who didn't quite get all they needed in this world, they'll have the opportunity there to progress and accept truths that they didn't find here in mortality. So that may explain somewhat of our interest in genealogy And we see all of us as being part of one family. And when we like the idea of, you know, tying ourselves together and being really being a complete unit.
Yeah, well, once you've gotten into genealogy, you keep finding out you're related to everybody.
That is what my mother tells me. She does a good bit of it, and so I keep hearing things like that from her.
Yeah, I have a friend who has traced himself back to the Trojan War, practically, if you can believe that he goes back to Julius Caesar and that goes back to Aeneas. It's like, oh my goodness gracious! So there's a lot of something. Yeah, it's I'm not sure that I trust all of those things because I think some of them go back to mythical people claiming ancestors that may not have been quite so direct as.
At some point the record becomes a bit suspect.
Yeah. So you do baptize your ancestors so that they, just in case, but you're not forcing it on them. You're just offering it to them, giving them an advantage.
Yes. And the thing is, it's an actual baptism. I mean, I've done it many times and I've performed it as well, in which someone basically is baptized in the same way that he would be baptized, you know, to become a member of the church, except that he's baptized in the name of someone who is dead. And men are baptized for on behalf of men who have passed on. Women are baptized for on behalf of women who have passed on. And this is actually one of the reasons that we have temples all over, all over the world. If you ever have seen, you know, some place that has a Mormon temple, this is one of the things that happens in the temples. We believe that it must be done in a sanctified special place, and that's one of the reasons that we have temples.
Oh, well, because the ordinances, these that rites have to, are there other important rites or ordinances that are very important?
Yes, and the temples exist for that. We believe the temples exist to help us to reach the highest level in the next life. And so there are, one purpose is for individuals to receive ordinances themselves. One example would be that people can be, a husband and wife can be married. We call it being sealed in temples. And for us, the actual wording of the ordinance, the ceremony, is not till death do you part, but it is for all eternity. So we believe that
we can
be married and that relationship lasts all eternity.
So I guess the Latter-day Saints do not believe in divorce.
Well, it's not that we don't believe in it. We certainly try to avoid it at all costs, but, you know, people being imperfect what they are, I mean, sometimes marriages don't work out, and that's a sad thing. But the hope is that a marriage would be an eternal marriage. So that's the goal, that's the hope. And, you know, if perhaps your first one doesn't work out, you know, well, you can try and get married again, and maybe that second one will be better. But, you know, we do place a big emphasis on family relationships, and not only are the husband and the wife sealed together for eternity, but their children are sealed to them and for eternity as well. And so that kind of is our goal and our hope that, you know, that it kind of gives us back into, we're looking at the whole human race as one family, and the idea is to have us all together as an eternal family in the hereafter. And so, you know, again, temples for us are an important part of that. So one thing is that Mormons would go there and receive these ordinances for themselves. For example, myself, I was sealed in the temple in Oakland, California, to my wife. And then that all these ordinances that we believe are necessary for the highest level in the hereafter can be performed on behalf of our ancestors who have passed before. And so, again, it's, you know, we do have a very definite belief about those who have passed on, about the afterlife, about what happens, and about our responsibility to it. there's not a huge amount of direct communication back and forth between the spirit world and the next. But we have a great belief that it is there, and we act as though, you know, that it really does, you know, those there people there do depend on us here.
Okay, well, now it's we're about halfway through, and I'm going to have to do a station identification. We'll be back in 60 seconds, and we'll have more. And I do want to get onto Mesoamerica. So here's the...
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
And we are back. This is Chipicon on the New Normal with Daniel Johnson. And we are talking about the beliefs of from the Church of the of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and often known as the Mormons. And we've been talking about the eternal life of the soul and the spirit, and I like the idea that the whole soul has its physical component as well. One of the things that before we get on to Mesoamerica, we briefly touched on. You said that beliefs on possession are a little bit different than other people's.
On possession, you mean?
Yes, I would be interested.
Okay. So, like demonic possession?
Well, we hadn't gotten into it enough, I think. So, the spooky stuff, which our guests want to hear, you know.
The spooky stuff. Okay. I was thinking about that. Well, we have a belief that definitely there are evil presences in the world. We believe in evil spirits. We don't use the term demons, but we believe there are evil spirits, and that in this pre-existence that I mentioned, there was a very powerful spirit who was known as Lucifer, and that he had a plan which was in opposition to what God's plan would be, and decided to basically create a war in this existence. And so he was able to convince one-third of all of God's children to follow his plan. And, of course, he was defeated and kicked out, and he and his evil spirits were cast down to the earth. And, of course, Lucifer becomes known as Satan to many religions, and Satan really is a title rather than a name. It means the adversary, and he has positioned himself as the adversary to all of us. We believe in these evil spirits are here, and they're spirits in the exact same way that we're spirits. So they are, you could think of as our spirit brothers, but they have set themselves eternally against God's plan and against us. So they're here currently. If you can think of one-third of all the people that ever be born on this earth, one-third of that number are these disembodied spirits who are here actively seeking to cause destruction, either on a large scale or on a small scale, and they're trying to make our lives miserable, trying to tempt us away from the path that we should go. So we believe that there is an active war going on, if you will, between our adversary and his minions and us. So that is a real thing. Evil is a real thing, and it's part of God's plan, but we all experience it here.
Okay, I'm a little bit confused. But
okay.
I want to clarify. So a third of people who are born are actually part of the fallen spirits?
No, they were never born. That's the whole point.
Oh, okay.
They were the one third of God's spirit children who would have been born. One third were cast down directly to this earth, and they are, you know, Satan and his followers that are here as spirits now. They were not born. They don't have physical bodies as we do, and they never will have physical bodies. And so that's one great blessing that they are denied because of their rebellion. But their point, their whole purpose here is to, you know, try and make our lives miserable. They're in opposition to God's plan. They're trying and help all kinds of bad things happen and to help divert us from the path we should be on.
Oh, okay. So, well, I'm glad you cleared that. So it was a third of all the spirits, but not all the people.
Yes.
But so, are people part of God's children in this? I'm just saying, you've mentioned spirits, and you've mentioned the fallen spirits, and you've mentioned the angels. So are these just all of God's children, or is there a hierarchy?
I have not actually mentioned angels, but that's a good thing to include in there. We have a concept of angel today that has kind of evolved for a long time, but from a biblical point of view, angel, whether you go back to Greek or to Hebrew, it means messenger. And angels in the Bible are never described as having wings. They're described as men. We read about beings that are called cherubim and seraphim in the Old Testament. They're described as wings. But the actual word angel means a messenger. So we believe that angels are our brothers. So we're all spirits. Angels, man, devils, we all started as spirits and spirit children of God. And that angels are just our brothers, but they're just at a different point in their progression than we are. And there's also belief that angels would be righteous people who would have lived upon the earth. So, for example, in the case of Joseph Smith, the angel Moroni, he was actually a man who lived on the earth a long time ago. He was the last prophet of the Book of Mormon. And that after his death, that he was able to return as a resurrected being, as an angel, to instruct Joseph Smith and give him the things he needed to know. So angels aren't really that much different from us. They are, like I say, they are our brothers.
Oh, that is cool. Now, I'm trying to do a little bit of myth-busting or rumor-busting.
Okay.
I've heard
that
the Mormons think of the Native Americans as a lost tribe. Now, is this a real warping of what you guys believe, or just totally off or close?
It's not totally off, and that takes us back into what's the importance with Mesoamerica and with this land, the Western Hemisphere, and with the Book of Mormon.
So I was hoping.
Yeah,
for.
So we're going right in there. So again, that's not to say that. I mean, if you say Native American, and you can go from, say, Alaska all the way down to the southern tip of South America, you've got all kinds of different people who are Native Americans, all kinds of different cultures. And so, you know, science tells us a lot of their origins. We know about, you know, people who came anciently, paleo hunters who came across the Bering Land Bridge and worked down that way. Our belief, and this is what the Book of Mormon says, is that other people came to the Americas who were led by prophets and guided to come here as a land of promise. And these people came from the Middle East. They came; many of them came from the land of Jerusalem. And they had with them, they were parts of the tribes of Israel. So we do believe that some lost tribes of Israel did come here, and the Book of Mormon tells us about that. Now, they were probably minorities compared with other people who were here. But we believe that that is what happened, that they were here, and that this, and that, you know, how that diffused out through time is kind of anyone's guess at this point. But we do believe that there are special blessings that were given to this land and given to the inhabitants of this land. So because of that, Mormons tend to have, I guess, a great love and respect for Native American cultures and kind of view them as brothers or as kindred spirits in sort of a way.
So is there, have the Latter-day Saints studied Native American teachings and cultural similarities, or?
They have, actually, and that kind of gets into, you know, the origin for the books that I've written and for the studies I've done and the trips that I've taken to Mexico and Guatemala and Honduras. Because, you know, once we get to the point where, you know, the Book of Mormon tells about people that came to this land and about, you know, a surviving group, then we might naturally look and see, well, you know, can we find any evidences of this? And this, you know, this becomes in some ways a bit controversial. There are Mormon anthropologists and archaeologists who dedicate their time to studying these things, and they've come up with a number of similarities. You'll have people who are not, and they don't tend to believe these things. So we believe that it really comes down to a matter of faith, but we believe that there are things there, there are similarities that can't be seen. And that was one thing that inspired me to, you know, on the studies I did and the things that I ended up writing in the books and, you know, traveling to these areas. And I love traveling to these places. I love the ancient culture and history of Mexico and Guatemala and those areas. I love the people. I love the culture as it is now. So that's something that, you know, is a great interest to me as well. And so, yeah, we believe there is, you know, there is that connection. One thing that is, you know, that is sort of a belief we talk about a lot is that there are traditions among a number of ancient cultures in the Americas of a great white god. And there are various names that they use. There was a Mexican name called Quetzalcoatl was for this god. There was a Mayan name, which was Kukulkan. In Peru, the name was Viracocha. And so there are some similarities about this benevolent being who descended from the sky and taught people many peaceful and great things. Well, the Book of Mormon, its account says that Jesus Christ, after his resurrection, came and visited people here. And so our thought is that these beliefs now may hearken back to and kind of be inspired by that.
Okay. So you do look through some of the old things. I looked over but did not get deeply into the website. I seem to remember something about other gold, when we would call it gold books, gold plates.
Yes.
And so, you know, they, you know, gold plates, my eyes light up and send in.
Yeah, wow.
can you tell us more about that?
Oh, certainly. That harkens back to Joseph Smith. The story that he tells was that the angel Moroni, that he, being the last prophet in the Book of Mormon, he finished up and compiled a record of his people that had actually had been destroyed by that time. And the record was on a book made of thin plates of gold. And the Moroni buried this. It ended up being in a hill in upstate New York, and that's where Joseph Smith found it under Moroni's direction. And so we believe that he translated these ancient records, and that's what the Book of Mormon is. The Book of Mormon wasn't invented or written by Joseph Smith or just given directly to him, but it's a translation of these ancient records. And so Joseph Smith's gold Bible was kind of a common thing that people talked about during his time. In fact, a lot of his enemies kept trying to attack him and attack the home looking for it and trying to steal it. So that is our story for the origin of the Book of Mormon. It was written on gold plates that were kept by, you know, the last members of this civilization in the Americas. And so it's interesting that there was no other real account of gold plates or writings like that known to Joseph Smith, But things like that have been discovered in, you know, say in the 20th century. And so I've actually done a lot of work looking into this and writing about gold plates from all over the world and kind of what their origins are. And so I found that quite a few that are from the Middle East in that area. In fact, the oldest book in the world that has leaves you can turn pages, it comes from around 600 BC and is on pages of gold.
Ooh, from where?
That's
where's
the old,
that from?
That's the oldest, what's that?
Where's that from?
It's from the Etruscan civilization. The Etruscan civilization, which was in Italy before Romans, there are several examples in the area where they wrote on gold plates. The oldest known biblical verses are actually on thin little scrolls or sheets of silver. And then there's also the copper scroll, which is one of the Dead Sea Scrolls found. But on my website, I have a page of papers I've written, and I have a paper on these various ancient plates of metal and just kind of what they were and where they were found. And I've got photos of them. I tell about where they are and their history. So I also looked into and was able to see in the archives of the Peabody Museum in Harvard that there was a Mayan city in the Yucatan Peninsula that recovered from that area were thin gold sheets and plates that the Maya had used, and in some cases they had carved hieroglyphics into them. These were symbolic things to them. They were given as offerings to the gods, but they actually did have this idea of thin plates or discs of metal that they would carve or emboss pictures and writing into them. So I've written about that just to kind of, you know, talk about the history of gold and other metal plates in the ancient world and kind of how they were used.
So might there be other, perhaps some, you know, there might be archaeological finds of other gold plates with important information for the church waiting to be dug up, or would you need another prophet to translate them?
We would need a prophet to translate them. And we believe that we do have a prophet. But we believe that, unlike other Christians, we don't look at the Word of God as ending with the Bible. We believe that there are all kinds of ancient records that have been written down by prophets, and that there are some still waiting to come to light. And when or if that will happen is it's all kind of within God's plan. But we do look at the idea that, you know, there are other possible records. The Book of Mormon itself, the translated portion that we have printed as the Book of Mormon, it was published in 1830, that was only one section of the plates that Moroni had. We believe there was a big chunk of them that were sealed, that the time was not quite right for them to come out. So we do believe in the fact that there are ancient records, you know, somewhere, and that if they come to light or not, wouldn't be just by chance, but it would be if it is in God's plan and if we're ready to receive them or not.
I was also interested because of my archaeological interest. Now you've gone down as far as Argentina or further south than that. I was just wondering how far the connection is the entire New World, the entire North and South America.
Mm-hmm.
Participating?
That's a great question, and it's something that has been an open question, because the Book of Mormon's not very specific as to where these groups of people came, and so it's kind of like piecing back together a puzzle. Now, my time in Argentina, I actually was a missionary there for 2 years. So if everyone's ever seen Mormon missionaries with wearing a white shirt and tie and a little name tag, I was a missionary, and in my area, I was in various places in Argentina. But as far as, I'll tell you kind of an interesting story about Argentina. I've always been fascinated by ancient cultures, you know, in Peru and Central America and all over. And there are even some interesting places not many people know about in North America. So I've always loved this stuff. I was kind of raised with that by my mother. And so when I was in Argentina, in a province in the mountains, I heard there was a site up in the mountains called Puente del Inca, which means the Bridge of the Inca. And there I see these postcards with this kind of cliff in the mountains and this you know stone structure on top. And I thought, I'd like to go there. So one day, my missionary companion and I, we got on a bus and went up into the mountains to see it. And, you know, it was a really cool, beautiful place from the Andes Mountains and snow-covered peaks all around us. We're hiking up to this place, and there's this land bridge going across and these hot springs. As it turns out, that structure is an English bathhouse. And the name Bridge of the Inca is kind of a mythological reference to this kind of bridge or rock archway which goes over the river there. So the structure that I was trying to see as an archaeological site was actually an English bathhouse built in the early 20th century on the hot springs there. So there's not a whole lot down there. As far as the ancient history that we might connect with the Book of Mormon, most Mormon scholars and archaeologists who really looked into this have kind of come to the conclusion that the events mentioned in the Book of Mormon itself probably take place in a fairly small area, not the entire Western Hemisphere. And they've kind of narrowed it down to Mesoamerica. And so southern Mexico, Guatemala, that chunk right there is known as Mesoamerica. And so that's kind of where most of our interest is right now, as far as being things that might directly relate to the Book of Mormon. But I think there is, in general, an interest in all ancient cultures. But, yeah, my studies didn't take me all the way down to Argentina. That was something different. So, and, you know, the stuff where I've traveled and studied and researched and visited sites has all been Mexico, Guatemala, and Honduras.
Wow.
Hopefully that answers the question.
Well, it's kind of cool. I mean, it's obviously a big, big subject. And
Yes.
And a lot of fun. And since we have to get off in 3 minutes, this is the part where I ask you if there's any other. I put up the LDS Guide Blogspot link. Are there any other things things I should post to let people know in case they want to find out more, get in touch with you?
Sure. I mean, with the blog, you can find out what I'm doing, and I've got a page there that has links to other radio shows, archives that I've been on, and some are more spiritual subjects, some are more paranormal. There are some where I've talked a lot about things like Bigfoot and UFOs on some
Ooh.
Of those.
Oh,
so,
yeah, I that. Okay, let
yeah.
me The people who are listening to this as a podcast, instead of being on the chat room, you go to www.ldsguide.blogspot.com, and that's how you can find out more and get in touch with Daniel Johnson some more. Any other links that we ought to? It's because of the podcast, I have to read them out.
Mm-hmm.
As well,
you know, that's really it. Just on that blog, they can email me if they like to. They can look and see the various things I've done. I've got links there to presentations I've given about specific archaeological things, and you can link to video and stuff. So I've given presentations on gold plates for at archaeological conferences. So there's a link to that there.
It was like a PowerPoint presentation. And you could go page by page, had lots of interesting
stuff. Yeah, exactly. So that's there. Also, I gave one last year on ancient horses in the Americas, and so rather controversial topic. So there are links there. I've also got a page of PDFs that are papers I've written on these types of things, and you can download those PDFs and read them for free. There's also information on the books and some samples there and just all about that. So that's, I mean, anything about this type of stuff, you can probably get to it from that blog.
Cool. Well then, as we are getting to 5 minutes of when they like me to get off, I guess I'm just going to thank you again for coming. This is really fun. And the podcasts are available in the archives of Live Paranormal. And thanks again. I guess I hope we all know a little bit more about the spiritual perspective of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Thank you for coming on, Daniel.
I appreciate you having me on. It's been a good opportunity. I've enjoyed it. And, yeah, I just really want to thank you.
Great. Okay, well, thank you again. And we're off, I guess. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.